哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿，哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿。Elder Voices, a window to the past, a door to the future.
Ay, 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 hey, ay, ay, hey.
My name is Velma E. Brown, and I was born in White Mountain, Alaska. The year of 1941 to my parents Thomas and Esther Brown. My parents and I lived in White Mountain most of the years that I was raised here until we moved to Nome for Dad, who had a job when I was about 4 years, 3 or 4 years old. And we stayed there about 2.5 years, where his job had kept him. And that was just about maybe 2.5 years. And from there we moved to Solomon because he had another job there. And we stayed there almost 2.5 years. He was a construction worker at the time. Then from there we moved to White Mountain when I was, 7 or 8 years old, and had lived here since then, going to school here. In my mind from the time I was a baby, going up to council, and then it goes blank for a while, and then the other part of the memory is being a small child, being at council. It was a booming town then. There was a school going on, there were a lot of houses, lots of people. The road was muddy, you couldn't get anywhere in the summertime after all that rain. And then there's a place close to the river downside, a big building that was something like a hotel and a bar. I remember going there when my mom told me to go look for my dad in there. I asked him what I gotta, ask him what? He said, you gotta come home for dinner. I went there, I walked in, I saw a glass cage with some goodies in it, big stuff. There was a cash register right here, and on the bottom there was where the men put their feet on, like brass, like where they rest their feet on. That was there, and I see a platoon, and I saw a couple guys, maybe 2 or 3 guys at the bar with their feet on there, down there. And then the other part was another glass cage, but with some candies, and they were these jars. That's what my eyes were set on when the guy behind the counter asked me what I wanted. But I had to tell him I came here to look for my daddy. He got to go home for dinner. Then he saw me looking at those candies. He asked me if I want any. But I remember my mom's words, you can't ask for anything you want unless someone asks you first. And then you gotta ask if you have to pay for it. So I asked that guy how much it costs. He asked me if I had any money. I said, no, I don't got no money. Then I put my hands in my pocket and was just gonna turn around. He said, here, you can have a couple of these. They're free. I give them to you. I said, oh boy. I put them in my pocket and I go back. I asked him who was my dad. He said, you gotta go back there by that door and holler for him. In the back room was the card room where they were playing poker or whatever game they were playing, pinochle or something. So I went over there and hollered for him that he had to come home for dinner. And I remember hearing those men laughing. thinking it was real funny for a little child to go over there and ask for his dad, her dad to come home because mom says so. And I went out. I was just happy to have the candies he gave me. So I went home, but I shared with my brother. My mom asked me where I got it from, and I had to tell her. And she asked me if I begged for it. I said, no, no, he just gave it to me because I didn't have any money. He just wanted to give it to me. She said, okay. My first couple years of school was in Nome because that was when they had that old school up. My teacher, Mrs. Nerland, was one of my favorite teachers. I was small. I remember it looked like a big school. There were so many rooms, and the gym was almost the center of the building where they, when they had it up. But during class time, we were using the kind that goes up this way, the desk, fold up and put down. And I had to sit in front of the class because of my hard of hearing. All those years I've been going to school, I had to always sit in front. It was during that time when I was in school in Nome Elementary, I had caught kumaks on my head. They're lice on the head from another student that I had been playing around with without realizing. And they're bad. They can really be transferred from one person to another. You really can't see them that well, but they can jump pretty far. It was during that time I had kumaks, and my teacher noticed it. So she sent me to the clinic to be examined by those two ladies, Eleanor Oakes and Liz Swanson, was then working in the clinic at the time. And they told me I had bugs, and I didn't understand that. I assumed it was like mosquito. So they had to send a note to my parents to bring home for her to come to the clinic. We went back, and they explained to her what I had to take in order to get rid of them. And they were in a bottle that you have to wash your hair about maybe 3 times a day to get rid of it. But in the meantime, my family had to stay clear away from me so it wouldn't be passed on to them. My older sister was with me, and she kept putting a chair in front of her before I can even go to her. And I didn't understand why at the time. If I so much get close, she'd grab a chair real quick and tell me to back off and stay away from her. And she was like that for a while, and I had to ask my mom why she was doing that. And that's when she tried to explain about the bugs in my, on my head and my hair. Then my memory goes to a time where we stayed in Nome, so far from town, almost. Well, we had such terrible storms at times in winter time where it blew so hard that we couldn't even walk to get any place unless the parents get a hold of your hand to take you to school or even anywhere. But I also remember in the old federal building when I came up with the running ear problem, that's where the doctor had his first office. On the second floor. The upstairs on the third floor was the post office where they had mailboxes and post office window open. And another place there was a clinic to be seen by some people, but also other offices that I can't remember. The one that I remember most was the doctor's office where I had to be seen for about my ear when I had running ear problem. That's where I lost this side, the left side. And when I was there, the doctor kept hollering at my mom. I could feel it, but I couldn't understand why he was doing that to her. He was scolding her because she should have let me come in sooner than when I did. She was trying to explain to him that we were in a storm and couldn't get to his office in time, and the storm raged like 3-4 days, and there was no way we could get to that place during that time. It was only calmed down when she took me down. And he said something to her in anger, and I got up and went to him and started hitting him, telling him to leave my mom alone. And he looked at me and he was gonna grab me. I pulled up my fist like this and I wanted to hit him real bad because I was angry at him for being angry at my mom. She come over to me and told me not to. But anyway, he fixed it up and gave me some medicine for it, but it was already too late to save it. It had damaged nerve inside where I can't hear anymore. My mom, she told me to try to learn to lip read if you can't hear, because I can't hear or understand what people are saying when they talk to me. And she would say an Eskimo to face me when they want to ask me something. And I had to practice lip reading from there. But I would tell them to face you when they talk to you. And it had become a habit since then. Even with my hearing aid on, I still need to have them face me. Because I am more in lip reading than hearing. When they talk to me, if it's in Inupiaq, then I would ask my mom what they're saying, and she would tell me. They grew up talking to us like that. That's how we grew up, when we listened to them talk in Eskimo language. Because of loss of hearing, it was hard for me to understand how to pronounce the words and how to say them. So I never did learn how to do that. I can understand just a few little ones. I had 6 brothers and 1 sister, no, 2 sisters. My older sister was by my mom's first marriage. She lived outside. She passed away about 3-4 years ago, something like that. But she had lived here for a short while in White Mountain, in Nome, and in Kodiak, where she met her husband. And they moved out to Oklahoma and stayed out there. But my brothers is Jack Brown, he's next to me. Then there's Philip, Tom Jr., Carl Brown, Roy Brown, Peter Brown. Wait, after Roy there was Enid and then Peter Brown. Enid is my sister. But one brother passed away named Roy. Jack lives in Gallivan. Philip, Tom Jr. and Carl live here in White Mountain, and so does Enid. But the younger brother lives in Anchorage, in a home or a place where he can be taken care of due to his disability, where he can't really take care of himself except for some few things that he can handle. But other than that, he had to take medicine in order to go by everyday basis living and learning how to cope with life and doing simple little chores. And for me, during the time when we stayed here in White Mountain, I had to take care of my brothers before my younger sister was born. When my parents go out fishing and hunting or dog teaming in winter to some places, I had to look after them. Well, they take off because I was the oldest one. And it was a chore, especially when you have to go after them to try to help with the chore, but they would just run away. And I got to go after them and look for them. Some of them don't remember that. But in some ways, it was kind of comical. If they climb on the house, I got to go climb up there too and try to get them down. Try to get them down. Other times they'll go try to climb up a tree and I gotta go up there and try to get them down too, one way or another, goading them same time. I mean, it was really something. But it was kind of comical in some ways that I remember. But those boys don't remember some of it. Oh, maybe 1956, 57. That's when I had to take off for Kotzebue Hospital for tuberculosis. I was diagnosed with TB. So they sent me up there, just 13 and a half years old. And I stayed up there 2.5 years, trying to get a lot of rest. But I got to meet a lot of people when I was up there, both the patients and the health aide, the nurses, and some doctors. That was in the old Kotzebue Hospital before they built a new one. My first few months up there was really homesick for home, and I really cried myself to sleep at times. But when I got a postcard or a letter from Mom and Dad, I felt better because I knew they were thinking about me. And the other ladies that were in there were 10 of us in one room. They tried to make me feel at home and talk to me and try to make me not too lonely by asking me questions about home and what life was in my hometown, because these ladies were from different places up north, past Kotzebue. Shalowick, Candle, Kiana, Kivalina, Shishmaref, those places up that way. I got to meet those. I was the youngest in that group, there were 10 of us. And I also got to meet the men that were in the down hallway, and they were from different places up there too. And the youngest one was a boy named Rodney Lincoln, about maybe a year and a half or 2 years older than me. And he used to tease me a lot. And when we get together like this, line up to go weighing time, that's when they got to weigh us on a scale. He always makes sure which one I'm, what number I am from the first, and he would do that. Be the same number as mine so we can see each other. I was bashful and shy at the time. I just didn't know how to associate with him. I didn't at the time understand about boys. I was really shy and bashful and didn't know how to handle it with him. Writing notes and teasing and laughing away and all that stuff. And it turned out later that he was related to us through his mom, named Doris Lincoln of Kotzebue. His mom was related to both my parents, Mom and Dad. So I didn't find out till way later when I come back home. Maybe 3-4 years or maybe more than that after I came home, he passed away from something that I couldn't understand, some accident or something. That was some few years later. When I came home, that's when I had to go back to being eighth grade, because I missed 1 year or 2 years of school. Go back to eighth grade again and start over from where I left off. I graduated from 8th grade from here and then spent time in Mount Edgecombe High School for 2 years only. From there, my sister wrote to my parents and asked if I could go to Oklahoma and spend some time with her. So I took off from Mount Edgecombe High School. Never did came home. I took off from Mount Edgecombe High School and went out on an airplane. And from there to Seattle, and from Seattle to Oklahoma City. In Oklahoma City, they picked me up with their car to take me to where they were staying. I was just going on 16, And I tried going to school out there when they enrolled me, but I couldn't handle their schoolwork because they were far more advanced than what Mount Eskom High School had. And I couldn't keep up, I couldn't understand any of it, so I had to quit school and start working to save some money to come back up this way. So I spent those almost 2.5 years trying to work to save some money to come up here. I didn't want to stay out there, it was too hot for me. But while being with her, we moved from one town to another. But I got to meet a lot of people, learn some of their cultures, especially the Indian tribes. And I also realized not having a high school diploma, you have to work on a lower class jobs like waitress, dishwasher, and a hotel maid. And they were the only things that I could do. But the one I hanged on to the longest was being a dishwasher and going to church where my sister went to. And while I was working there, the pastor had explained to my sister that she had told the congregation at that time they were going to start pooling in some money for my fare from Wellington, Kansas to Seattle. And I didn't know it at that time. They kept it a surprise until I went to church one day. They asked me to go up there, and I did. And he produced a train ticket and some money to spend. But before this, while I was out there, I got pregnant with my son. He was just a baby when we took off, by maybe 7 or 8 months old. And I didn't want to give him up for adoption. I wanted to have him come home with me. When we boarded the train, they put us in a place where I can take care of him and have him bottle fed and feed him. It was a long ride, but we made it to Seattle, and from there we got on a plane to Anchorage. And then from Anchorage we went to Nome, and I thought I was going to have enough money to come here to White Mountain from Nome, but I didn't. So I had to wait in Nome for a while before my parents or myself to come up with some money for the fare for me to come home, one-way ticket. And it took quite a few months before like 1 or 2 months before I can come home. Those years between that time and when I had kids, blank out. You know, some of them were not very good, so I can't remember. I was an alcoholic. I had turned into an alcoholic, and you have a lot of blank memories, or none at all. It was terrible for those first few years of being an alcoholic where you can't remember a lot, but you end up having accidents or hurting yourself that you can't remember. And those things, I'm just going to say that. It made me realize that alcohol is not the thing to do when you have kids. It's better to really think about what your life is going to really be like if you get off of it and make something better of yourself, which is what I had to do for my kids. It wasn't easy, because it was really hard to try to find work. But over the course of years, I tried working and got to a point where I couldn't anymore when arthritis set into my body, starting first with the back and the knee, before I reached the age of 30 anyway. Small at first, but gradually, over maybe 4 or 5 years, it really started getting bad then. But it got to the point where I couldn't work anymore and applied for a disability. And been out since. Couldn't work anywhere. Couldn't do much. But I was able to do some schoolwork before the old school burned down, to be an instructor for knitting and crocheting for a short while. trying to teach first in grade school the basic thing of knitting and crocheting. And that lasted only like a couple of years, and these were just on short term, like a couple of hours a day for a school year, and maybe one or two times a week. And after that, either there was not enough material, or it just stopped, and I just stayed home being a mother. Moved from here to Nome, and then from Nome to Fairbanks. Stayed in Fairbanks for a while. Lived there for about 2 years. I tried to work down there to have some money for myself to take care of my boys. I live off and on here in White Mountain, going to Anchorage when I end up with having hemorrhage and losing a lot of blood and a miscarriage same time back in 1970-something, end up in Anchorage Hospital. They said if I had waited another day or two, I would have been dead already. They had to send me down right away. So I ended up staying in the hospital almost 2 weeks, and I didn't want to come back home, so I had to find someone to stay with. I didn't have nothing up here at the time to come home to. I just didn't feel like coming back home, not for a while. So I stayed in Anchorage, tried to look for work to save up some money, even for a place to stay. Relatives that I knew that were staying in Anchorage, I had to stay down there and then try to look for work, any place, work. And applied for AFDC and food stamp doing that. Even then it was tough too, coping with living in a big town, big city. That was between 1970 to 78, I tried to work my way down there to help pay for the rent in apartments or a little house we were staying in. But even that created a problem when you have a neighbor that likes to bother you so much that you have to move to another place. It was hard trying to find a place where there's no alcoholic guys around. Life after that was a little tough. When I couldn't handle it anymore, I asked my parents if I could come back home. They said, yeah, we could, so we ended up coming back here. Me and my two boys, I had those two boys with me. It got a little too tough for me, so I had to save up some money from there to come back home. I was traveling back and forth, but it never lasted very long, and I eventually started staying home here in White Mountain. And through the course of a few years, very few things that I don't remember too much about, but it was enough to know that I had a roof over my head, a place to sleep for me and my kids. I was staying with my parents. Then I applied for a housing, to have a house of my own. I got this from 1982. I was working in Nome at the time for Betty Gufferson as a dishwasher. And then I had a call from my parents saying that they finished building up my house and that I should move back. I tried to tell Betty that I have to quit work there and come home to my new home. She didn't want me to quit. She wanted me to stay. In fact, she was going to raise up my wages up if I stayed. But I said, I can't even do that. I have to come home to move into my new house. So when I came here, brand new, no furniture, no bedding, no dishes, no blankets, nothing. We started off with making bed straws, bed mattress out of grasses out here, picking a whole bunch of them, put two sheets together, sew the sides and one end and fill it up with grasses to use for mattress. We use our jackets for pillow. Then when I applied for AFDC, I start getting some things what we needed each month, a little at a time. I applied for food stamps first to have some food to eat. Borrowed pot and pan from my parents, some dishes. And just gradually start slow but surely having some things. They were kind of a hard times then, before prices really went sky high. They were hard times even. Living here in White Mountain was tough too when you have no job and just live on welfare and food stamps. Although it helps out, but working was something else. It was really hard to find work here. When we stayed here, we began to have some drinking problems in the family. It was really hard to cope with it. I had to move out of the house, try to move back to Nome to stay in a place where it'd be safer, and then send for my two boys later. We didn't stay very long in Nome. It was kind of hard trying to take care of them and get a job at the same time and have someone take care of them while I'm at work. I eventually let those two boys came down here to stay with my parents while I work over there until I got my house. But in those course of years that they went through a drinking problem, there was often times that they did something to me that was really hurtful, painful, that I couldn't fight back because Mom told me not to fight back. She said, just pray for them and forgive them for what they did to you. Be good to them, then God will be good to you. It took me a long time to figure that out and really started to think, maybe it's better if I let all my hurt and anger or whatever I had in me toward them to let God take care of it. So I pray to him to take it from me and not think about it, but to think good about them and to forgive them and to love them, which I did. It took a while for that idea to stick in and stay with it, but it worked. I'm really happy about the way our family is now together, even though we're not close, but families are still family. We're still coping with each other and with our everyday problems, but we're still family. And it helps to be a family when you can rely on each other for help and to be there for them. I love all my brothers and sisters, all my kids and grandkids and great-grandkids. Well, for my grandkids that are already adult and have kids of their own, I hope if they go through a turbulent time in their life, is to stop and think and pray to God, to ask for his help, his guidance and wisdom in taking care of their family and their kids as well. And for my other grandkids that are scattered, I pray that God will watch over them and keep them all from harm's way, and that they'll grow up to be beautiful, healthy kids, even if I don't see them. That they'll remain strong and be close to their families. And for my great-grandkids, they're still babies, some of them, but I love them, and I hope that they'll too will become strong and remain in their family and be close with each other and their grandparents as well. And above all, learn to love each other, and if something goes wrong in the family, learn to forgive and ask for forgiveness, but most of all to love them, because love is a very powerful thing that overcomes all. Thank you.
You've been listening to Elder Voices, a production of KNOM.
If you are an elder or know an elder who would like to participate, call KNOM at 907-443-5221 or write to KNOM Radio, Elder Voices, P.O. Box 988, Nome, Alaska, 99762. Thank you for listening to Elder Voices.